Session number 12661, Mr. Jim Ray, reel 29.
Mr. Ray, reel 29. You were moving into the plane towards the Michinar airstrip, and
Michinar and other townships around, but it didn't come into sight because in the meantime I was made RSM of the battalion, and Mr. Platz, he had to go. He got yellow to join us. He was the RSM and had to take over.
So what were your duties as RSM then?
Coming to it, the RSM is always with the commanding officer. He does a.
And who was your commanding officer at that time?
Lieutenant Colonel Hilliard. Yes, he was
the. He was the chap we'd had in the 6th as well.
Yeah. And I met Colonel Jeffries. He was a downright infantry. He's a brigadier. And he came up and when it was my time to leave Burma, which it was, and I think this is my conclusive talk about this Burmese war as it was concerned myself. And when, because I think he recognised me because he spoke my name.
Jeffries did.
Because he used to be our adjutant in pre-war.
What did you think of Jeffries?
Oh, he never changed. Smart chap he was, yes.
Good officer, was he?
Well, he was. Would be, yes. He was brigadier.
So what, you were RSM, and what did that entail?
Well, it entailed taking over from Mr. Platz and getting around and organising what was to be done in BHQ as regards everything to do with supplies, in coordinating with the regimental quartermaster sergeant, you see, taking any disciplinary action, you see, amongst anybody.
So when did you become RSM? Do you know the date?
Yes, the 11th... 11th of the 7th, 1944. And I was... I was repatriated on the 2nd... the 3rd, 46.
Right, so what we, the next thing we've got to look at is what you were doing in that time, if you see what I mean. You say you were in charge of disciplinary matters.
Well, that would have happened, but in the meantime, me being made up with RSM, I didn't become more substantive, you see, and class 1, so I had to go back to RQMS. Regimental Quartermaster Sergeant, that's the next one down to it, you see. However, apart from that...
So when you were RSM, how did you maintain discipline amongst the African troops? I mean, what measures would you have, or would you need anything special?
Well, if anyone committed any serious crimes during war, anything like that, which never happened, actually it was a good job because the RSM and I were very closely associated. Inasmuch as during the campaigns, he used to call on me, and in one particular instance, there's an operation being done on an African. He was sick, and he wanted me to help him to hold a lamp during the night in the operating theatre. The light was a car headlamp, and the only thing to do was to hold it and support it, like a bamboo pole, and hold it so the doctors could operate. It was, you know, it was holding it in position and keeping it down like that. It was a hard job, really. And he asked me if I'd come and help him. He said, well, he said, Jim, he said, if you do that, he said, we'll have a drink of rum after the op, like. Well, he went in the first session, and I went in the second, and because everything was going on, there was two doctors and an anaesthetist. And they're working on the African's abdomen, and they made an incision, and they brought so much of the gut out and put support underneath and stitched around it to keep that gut on the top. And they went down below, and there was something wrong with his testicles, so they just slipped the skin open and took the infected one out and cut it. And one of the dogs says, dropped it in an enamel pill. He said, well, that's one he won't need anymore. Think, you know, like that. And stitched him up. A bit of a sickening sight to see this happening under your nose, like, you know. Anyway, Jim came in again and it took over again. I went outside. I felt a bit queasy, you know, but I wasn't sick. And they packed up and they took the sick man out and they put him in the makeshift hospital, like, you know. So, and we just sat and had a bit of talk, chat and a drink of rum. That was that job over. But it wasn't, just after that, Jim took jaundice and he was invalided out. And that wasn't long before I followed him out, Peter. And my time was up, my number, you see.
But I thought you were RSM for quite a while before you came out of Burma. Because if you became RSM in July 44 and left in February 46.
Ah, yes.
March 46.
But Mr. Platts, he was still dodging about, you see, and I knew I was being made RSM from them dates. So that was it. That was quite in order, because the commanding officer, he told me I was next for his position. But I still went back to my company as a platoon officer, see? And platoon, I never had an officer in my platoon.
So what happened after you got to the plane? You mentioned, what operations were you on before the end of the war, before you were sent back?
Well,
was there any more fighting at all, or what were you doing?
Well, more or less making sure there were no odd pockets of resistance, because the Japs were really in retreat from our side, you see. They were demoralised.
What about this long patrol you got to come?
Oh, this was previous to it. The CO sent for me and he told me, he said, I've got a job for you, Sergeant Major. I said, I've particularly want you to do this one. And I said, well, what is it? He said, well, he said, what's it entail? He said, first of all, he said, it's got to be done as quickly as possible. It's a long range patrol. Pick what men you want. You're going to have a Burmese intelligence corporal with you. And he said, you're going out, he said, from the intelligence reports we've received, we can't get any intelligence on this certain area. And he says, and I wish you the best of luck. I said, well, thank you, sir. I probably need it. And I said, I'll do the best I can, sir. He said, I know you will. He said, now, I want you to report to the battalion intelligence officer, now. Well, I went and saw the intelligence officer and I spoke to him. He said, yes, he said, we've been expecting it. He said, where are you going, Sergeant Major? He says, nobody knows anything about this area. You can't get any information, but it's of very important, of grave importance. So he didn't give me one map. He gave me three. three maps. And this patrol took me 4 days. I had six Africans, the best I could find, intelligent, and the Burmese Lance Corporal. And I set out in the early morning and tracking, had a compass, tracks that were there, and the survey, you know, the ordnance survey, some tracks that were on the map, they didn't exist, except from where you could see there being a track, you know, with a bit of a clearance. It was a hell of a lot of the job, that one. The first day, set off at 8 o'clock in the morning, had breakfast, a cup of tea, I took rations of what I needed, I took all ammunition, I offloaded what was not necessary for lightweight, and the first 24 hours went till from 8 o'clock in the morning till sundown at 6 o'clock at night. When I looked at my maps and measured up how far I'd gone, I'd done 25 miles in that time, the six of us. And we had little stops in between, you know, for a drink of water and brew up, so you can see we were travelling through that bush. The next day, got through like a map and a half. Next day, started off again, and got to positions on the maps and marked it off myself where I was exactly at the time, the coordinating figures, and pushed on again, kept pushing forward, marching on. I think I must have done another 10 or 15 miles, and then I hit on to the place where I had to report. I had to report to the V force. The V force was run by a British captain. The remainder were natives, and he had a platoon of Indian soldiers. It's getting on from about 4 o'clock in the afternoon or five. I left my men on one side of the Chong, and I waded through on my own, and I reported to him. He says, yes, he said, we've been expecting you.
How had you found them?
Well, eh?
How had you found them?
By map.
You knew their position, yeah?
Yeah, by map. I didn't know who I'd find. I wasn't told. And it was the V force. And he said, well, are you spending the night over here, Sergeant Major? I said, no, I'll go back to the men. I said, I've got to report to you. I've got to report to you anyway. What's your name, Captain? Oh. No, I can't think of his name. Pretty great chap he was. He wanted me to stop over there and a bit something to eat, you know. I said, no, I'll go back to my men, because I said I'm pushing off at the crack of dawn, backtracking. Well, I wasn't interrupted by any enemy at all. I don't think I came in contact with two villages in all that time. It was all rough going.
Couldn't V Force have given the intelligence that they were looking for, though? Or was it the gap in between the two?
Well, when you're talking about the V Force, they operate in groups all over, and they're in contact with by radio and by code, you see. And if you wanted to know anything, they wouldn't tell you anyway, because they were hit Secret Service. And in the meantime, you didn't have only the Japanese to contend with. You had the INA, the Indian National Army, and the BIA, the Burmese National Army as well. These are the people that didn't want British in their country.
Did you come across them yourself ever?
Only once, but that was dealt with not by me, but by dealt with the battalion in particular, Peter, but by some other company, you see, while I was out on this patrol. Now, the purpose of my patrol was to find a route to move the whole of the 81st West African Division to another area. And that, I got highly commended. It was the CO, when I did see him later, the adjutant came. When I got back, it took me 2 hours to make out my report in full scap. And again, I was so tired, I thought the intelligence officer said, would you mind putting the coordinates down, the numbers, while I make out all the information? I said, oh, not at all. So we sat side by side, had my notebook and high points of different areas, where the water supplies were, what kind of terrain it was, how far I travelled the first day, and it's an inch to the mile, you see, on the ordnance. And I think I must have done about 56 miles in the 2 days out and two back. I was shattered. I had no sleep, very little to eat, and ran back to my company headquarters. And the adjutant, George Simpson, he come and said, here you are, Sergeant Major. He said, you've been mentioned in field dispatches. He says, well, keeping hold of that. And I read it. It was an army signal to the battalion from brigade headquarters. Seeing Simpson's reconnaissance report, suddenly stopped, has been of great value to the forthcoming move. The care in which it has been rendered is very much appreciated.
Anything else you remember about your time there before? You were out there during the VE day then, were you?
You came
back well after the war.
Oh, right? Yes.
Yeah. What do you remember about the end of the war in Europe? What did you think when you got the news that Germany had surrendered? Where were you?
It was very late, I think. I didn't get to know whether in Burma with my battalion. It might have filtered through, but and it kept it quiet for jubilation's sake, you know what I mean? Thinking, well, that's it, we're all finished now, but we had the Japanese to contend with. We still had them, we're still battling on, you know, it was the longest war. If it hadn't been for the Hiroshima and Nagasaki bombs, we'd have still been carrying on. Yeah, definitely. I didn't get to know about it until I eventually got back to Bombay.
So, what about the actual Japanese surrender? When did you find out about that? I mean, that.
I was in England when VJ. I got back to England. I flew out from India, from Burma into India, back to Calcutta.
So you left before the end of the war?
Yeah. Yes.
Why were you brought back before the end of the war?
Because my age and the time I'd spent in warfare, yes.
Were you sorry to leave you?
Well, I was. I would like to have seen it through. Honestly, I would like to have stayed right to the end. But I had to go.
Was there any sort of leaving ceremony from the men? Did this? Or did they say anything?
Well, I went back to my own platoon and saw the lads, and some of them even started to cry. So why are you leaving me now? You know, you brought us out here. Why don't you stay and take me back? And things like that. You know, it upset me. But anyway.
What about your servant?
Well, I had to leave him behind. Yeah. I had to leave him behind. So little Affleck Bill, sir, you know, that was with me. We got mortared on a hilltop at Point 13, and he was killed, and he died in my arms.
When was that?
In Burma, Hill 13.
Which was that?
That was that That was, I think it was after we left the Letwa. Yeah.
But that was just an isolated incident.
Yeah. I was sent up there. The Japs had been knocked off, off that hill, and I went up and took over the positions of the Japs. And about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, mortar shells started to come down. And little Afflick caught a piece, and couldn't get him down because at nightfall, couldn't get him down myself. And I just had him, I put a ground sheet around him, kept him warm. He was lying in my arms, and I had him up the tree trunk like that. And he was mumbling and moaning through the night and talking in his own language, and he passed away. Next morning, an officer came up, and I'd have a look round. He said, "Are you all right then?" I said, "Yes, but I said, will you take this one down, please, for me?" And he looked, and he put him over his shoulders and carried him down for me.
How did you feel about the Japanese yourself? What did you think of them? I mean, some people hate them, from the war.
Well, I had nothing but contempt for them, really. I mean,
why?
Well, they're savages. Savages.
What makes you say that, though?
Look, fanatics. There was no rule of war with them. Not at all. I'd rather have shot myself than being captured. For instance, it's rather peculiar. There's only about one or two instances where the Japanese left one or two dead behind. There might have been more, but might have been not been able to take them. In other instances, they cleared all the dead away and buried the rest, the wounded and some of the dead. I don't know. That was one of their traits anyway, Peter. me and Jimmy Chapman, we went out after we had a duffy with the Japs, cleared the area. After I'd come in from patrol on the back door, and I'd had a rough engagement with the Japs, before I evacuated during the day, I was told to take patrol a certain area and the route, because there's a large formation of Japanese coming in our direction. Before I did that, I made screens in squares out of bamboo for the traversing of my two guns before I left, with the white showing on the inside, the green on that side. Even in the half light, you could see the framework, and so you got a good field of fire in those frameworks on a mass attack. Sergeant Jamison took over my platoon while I went out with Sergeant Church, Len Church. We went on this patrol. And we didn't see any Japs. They must have come round in another area, into towards our frontal positions. And I came round, and it was getting dark. So we stayed there, and the Japs they made an attack during the night time. They made their attack night time. So I said to Len, his way, I said, "There's half a ding dong there." I said, "Do you know where that is, Len?" He said, "He said, I think it's out front door, the battalion." Yeah, I said, "It is." And I said, "They've got through there anyway, whoever it is." Anyway, we proceeded forward on the area, Peter, and we stood round overlooking the like the long chong of shallow water, and we saw two or three Japs coming along, and they stopped and filled the water bottles. Easy knock off. So Len says, "There's three." He said, "Two of them went by and the other one stopped and filled his water bottle." He says, "What are we going to do?" I said, let him go in. "What are we going to do then?" I said, "We're going to follow them in." "Are we?" I said, "Do they?" I said, that's their back door. I said, if when we go in there, I said, "We've got them bottled up. They can't go forward. I said, when they come back, I said, we'll catch them as sure as God made little apples. We've got them cornered here. Oh, okay. Then we went down. And in the meantime, I sent one of my Sparks, little Affleck, before he got killed, I wrote a little message out. I said, you know your way back for battalion, the same way we come. Yes, sir. You take this to the company commander. And on the map, I traced, we had a map, the area was all laid out like, and I put the X's where to put down the mortar fire. Because we went in and we were concealed, and you could see what they were doing in there. Mind that they suffered some casualties, because there's part of a thin stream, and there's blood-stained bandages, bars of soap and all sorts of, like, along that stream where they'd been, and you could hear them moving about. Anyway, Affleck had done his job to put the mortar fire down exactly where the tournament put down. They kept it going and they cleared off, and then we moved in and they'd gone. There wasn't a jet to be seen. What they'd done, they got panicky. They didn't come my way. I was waiting for them because we were in long grass, and we had everything set. I was ready, you know, come on. See if there's anybody come down this track. Let's have a go. But they'd gone sideways, over that side and over that side. They didn't come back towards me. And when I went back to the battalion, there were a few casualties amongst the blacks. Not the Europeans. So that was conclusive on that issue, Peter.
Right, and that's about the last active service thing you remember, you know, those stories. Yeah. So you flew back to Calcutta, was it? You flew back to or Bombay?
Calcutta, yeah.
And you knew you were going back to England?
Yes.
And what was the trip like? That was your first air flight, wasn't it?
First air flight. Well, with me, there was the Captain Quartermaster, Captain Rains, on one side, and I was sitting on the other side, and there's a few more Europeans in, and I was sitting over the wing, and I could see all the black oil coming out the cowlings, like the engines. And I thought, and I was going back over the ground. I'd walked, I could see all these razorbacked hills laid out in you know, all in detail. And I thought, well, I hope we're airborne. I see all this black oil that's streaking over there, the slipstream. I said, I think we'll be all right anyway. But we landed in Calcutta. And from there, it was quite all right. We had decent billets, and we had nothing to do. We were time expired. And
how long were you there for?
About a couple of weeks. In the meantime, I got on well with the Yanks. They were, the first one was Edgar Kennedy, I think. Edgar Kennedy. And he belonged to Texas. And he used to operate one of these air ambulance aircraft, you know. And he invited me to Barrackpore. And I thought, hello, Barrackpore, this is it. The Yanks are in the old barracks that I used to be in. But they were in huts. And the other part of the barracks, there were what they call running in the engines before they put them in the aircraft, because the aircraft came in pieces, you see. Had a good time there, some good food. You get your food in a big stainless dish plate with, like, indentations in. Potatoes in that one. Swimming in that one, meat in that one, ice cream in that one, bread and coffee, or just red coffee. Yeah.